This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. After all the set pieces of an American presidential campaign, the primaries, the conventions, the debates, and after months and months of air war, commercials, interviews, news coverage, opinion surveys show the race is neck and neck across the country and in the battleground states. Though an estimated 20% of the electorate will have voted early, unprecedented interest in the race is expected to translate into historically huge out-turnout tomorrow. So what could be another very close election will come down to the ground war. Both of the parties and allied groups are spending extraordinary sums to get their supporters to the polls. Armies of political workers are knocking on doors, staffing phone banks, and handing out leaflets, while battalions of lawyers stand by in reserve. Throughout this hour, we'll take a look at the latest polls, visit two key states, Florida and Ohio, and look at some of the other important races on the ballot. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What are you doing today? Organizing, get out the vote drive, signing up people who need a ride to the polls, turning out, or tuning out? Has either campaign contacted you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org, a non-advocacy website that provides news and analysis on election reform. And it's good to have you with us, Doug.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be here.
For seemingly almost every election day you hear, you know, the turnout's going to be surprisingly large. This time around, there seems to be good reason to believe it.
This time around, there seems to be very good reason for that. I have some colleagues out in the states who are reporting that early voting lines are down the block, and we're hearing reports even in Florida of some early voters being given numbers deli style in order to get their number in line. So the interest we're seeing around the country seems to be sky high.
Now, the National Annenberg Election Survey reports today that a large number of Americans do not think that their votes will be counted accurately. After the Florida fallout from 2000, people exceptionally cynical this year as well?
I think it's a good example of being intimately familiar with the process, and there's the old line about those who love the law and sausages should watch neither being made. I think we've been given a crash course in the intricacies and the weaknesses of the electoral process, and that combined with the fact that we are a evenly and apparently bitterly divided nation means that everyone is worried that their vote might not make it through the process.
Can you give us a snapshot of the state of play around the country today? I mean, in terms of, charges of irregularities or fears of irregularities?
Yeah, the state of play around the nation today is almost a 50-state battle about voter eligibility. I mean, one of the things that we've noticed in the last couple of weeks is that unlike the 2000 election, which turned on how certain ballots were cast, the fight now seems to be about whether voters should be allowed to cast ballots. Are they eligible in their precinct? Were they properly registered? Were they registered by a group who didn't do a good job of dotting I's and crossing T's in the process? The battle around the country right now, mostly in courthouses, although in some polling places, is about whether or not a state's interest in protecting the process from fraud outweighs voters' interest in being able to cast those ballots at all.
And in particular, in Ohio today, an interesting federal court decision.
A very interesting federal court decision. Two district courts, in fact, have ruled that that neither party may have challengers of any kind in the polls on Election Day, even though state law provides for that. One judge actually, the challenge had been largely on racial grounds, but what at least one judge found was that the impact on all voters in line, regardless of their race, was sufficient that the state's aim at protecting the process was not narrowly tailored to the need to have those challengers in the polls.
Let me ask, get a refinement on that. The effect of everybody online, not just the voter who is challenged, but if you challenge a vote, presumably that delays things and everybody has to wait online and people get tired of waiting online.
Exactly, and we're already seeing that in early voting and everywhere else, that long lines really are a feature of the process this go-round. And the concern seems to be, at least in the two court cases, that the need of precinct judges to step away from their other duties to handle these challenges would determine detract from their ability to help voters get through the line. The problem really seems to be that these state laws were written with the intent of challenging the occasional voter who had an obvious problem. They weren't necessarily designed to handle the mass number of challenges that were being at least considered for tomorrow.
Well, let's check in now with some of the – Doug Chapin's going to stay with us. But let's check in now with some of the opinion polls around the country. Opinion surveys, as you probably know, always say, well, this is just a snapshot. If the election were held today, well, today that's a pretty good question. If the election were held today, who would you vote for? John McIntyre joins us now. He's editor of RealClearPolitics.com, a website that collects and averages the results of much of the polling that's being done out there. He's with us today from his office in Chicago. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here, Neil.
A lot of polls conducted over this past weekend. Anything new?
There's been some tightening of the race in the national averages. Our poll average has moved from the president being up 2.5 points to now under 1.5 points, 1.3%. So there's been some movement in some of the tracking polls towards Kerry. The Fox News poll actually shows Senator Kerry ahead now by 2 points.
And I assume that 1.3% would be within the margin of error.
Yeah, just about all these polls are within the margin of error. The Newsweek had a poll showed a 6-point lead. That's the only poll really now that is above 3 either way.
Now, what about, as we know, this is not a national election, but an election in 50 states and the District of Columbia, so 51 separate elections. The battleground states are key as you look to the Electoral College, which are now in the toss-up category.
Well, there's a whole lot in the toss-up category. I mean, the big ones are Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota. That's really where this election is going to be decided. And Minnesota probably shades a little to Kerry right now, but the rest are just, very, very close.
The conventional thinking all along is Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, anybody who carries two of those three is likely to be the winner.
Yeah, that definitely was the idea in the summertime, and I think that was the strategy that the Kerry campaign pursued when they went after Florida and Ohio, thinking that they would hold Pennsylvania, and they would need to take one of either Florida or Ohio. One of the changes is the president has been somewhat successful in putting some of the Midwestern states that Gore carried in 2000, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, into play. Also, New Mexico is a state where the president's running pretty well in that Gore carried. So that allows him to perhaps lose Ohio if he's able to, say, carry New Mexico and Wisconsin. That would offset those electoral votes.
On the other hand, Kerry is looking pretty good in a toss-up state of New Hampshire, which went to Bush last time around. But we heard late in the campaign that suddenly Hawaii, always considered a reliable Democratic voting state, might be a toss-up as well.
I think that's a little wishful thinking on the part of Republicans. There were two polls done probably a couple weeks ago by now in Hawaii that showed the race very close. Actually, showed the president ahead. They were done in mid-October, but they both sides, the president even then, when you averaged him, still had under 45% of the vote. This is a state Al Gore carried by over 18 points. There's just really no conceivable way in a national race that's this close that you could expect Hawaii to vote for President Bush.
Everybody always gets surprised at least somewhere. If you had to pick out some place that might be a little bit out of the norm, what would you think?
That's a great question. I mean, I think what would be surprising is if Kerry was successful in carrying, winning one of Florida or Ohio, yet the president was somehow able to hold on and win. You're right about New Hampshire. New Hampshire looks like it's flipping towards Kerry. And the way these state numbers work, just if Kerry were to win Ohio and New Hampshire and President Bush were to win Wisconsin and New Mexico, you're looking at a 269-269 tie. And there's a couple other scenarios that would produce...
Halloween was yesterday.
Yeah, I know. And there's actually just the way the numbers work, there's a couple other scenarios that are very plausible that you could end up with 269, 269. And so the odds of that happening on a given election cycle are, you know, just probably way, it's like winning the lottery. And so I'm not suggesting that that's the likely outcome, but it is not an inconceivable outcome. That could be at another twist to everything that we would be going through election night.
John McIntyre, thanks very much.
Thank you.
John McIntyre, editor of RealClearPolitics.com, with us from his office in Chicago. Let's get a listener on the line if you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. And Catherine is with us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, and of course we know people in Oregon vote by mail.
There you go. Well, I had an interesting call from my mother. She lives in Australia, and she was listening to French news, of all things, and they had a story about 600 mail ballots being lost through the Postal Service. And she asked me if I'd heard anything about it, and I said, no, I hadn't read or heard anything about it. And she had friends in Florida. She asked them.
Mail ballots lost in Florida, not in Oregon.
No, lost in Florida.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Doug
and,
Chapin, are you aware of this story?
I've not heard of the ballots. I've heard about 60,000 absentee ballots that somehow went missing between the Broward County Elections Office and the United States Postal Service, and neither side seems to be aware of what happened to those. I also know that the Palm Beach County supervisor is actually overnighting ballots to some out-of-state residents who claim that they didn't get them in time.
And I know in two states, excuse me just a second, Catherine.
Sure.
In two states, Pennsylvania and Colorado, the time for absentee ballots to be received is being extended.
Exactly right. And that's in this election where everyone believes that a tiny number of ballots can make a huge difference. Heretofore, tiny details are being scrutinized at a level that we've never seen before, the deadline for absentee ballots being one of them.
Okay, Catherine, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. Well, that was my question. I mean, this 60,000 ballots, what was being done then? And then I'm just curious why we haven't heard anything about it. People are so concerned about this tight race.
I honestly don't think it's been I've heard about it. Doug's heard about it. It's been out in the news and pretty well covered, I think, Catherine.
Okay. So well, it's being taken care of, essentially.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. Broward County certainly leads the nation in sweaty palms on Election Day.
Yeah.
But they are doing what they can, I know.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
With us now is Barry Horstman. He is assistant managing editor of the Cincinnati Post. Of course, Ohio is one of the key states. Thanks very much for being with us, Barry.
Glad to be here.
As we mentioned, that federal court ruling in Ohio earlier today. Briefly, this was a lawsuit brought by a black couple?
Yes, a black couple in Cincinnati. The Republicans have plans to post several thousand so-called challengers at polling places across the state on Election Day. Their argument is we want observers there to make sure that no fraudulent votes are being cast. Others, primarily Democrats, have said we think there's a real intimidation factor at work here. It strikes us as more than coincidental that most of these observers are going to be placed in generally minority precincts that heavily vote Democratic. And this couple, the woman in the couple is a former Cincinnati City Councilwoman, said this harkens back to the kind of things we saw in the Deep South in Jim Crow days. This has no place in a northern election. The judge sidestepped that issue and simply said, I don't see how having these people at the polls on Election Day will do anything but make it more complicated, and has ruled there should be none. However, that decision has been appealed. We'll probably see this playing out throughout the day in the federal courts here in Ohio.
Now, President Bush was there in Cincinnati last night, big rally.
He was. One of the biggest rallies of his campaign, roughly 35,000 at Great American Ballpark. Largely a reiteration of what we've been hearing in the last 4 or 6 weeks. I think we've all heard this speech frequently enough we could almost recite it verbatim. But this is Bush country very clearly in southwestern Ohio, and I think he recognizes to carry the state, he's going to have to dig a little deeper and even mine some more votes out of this GOP-rich area.
If you had to make a prediction about Ohio right this very minute, what would you say?
I'm going to dodge it. Our own poll and others I've seen in the last week have generally shown a margin of a percentage or two for one candidate or the other, all of which falls within the poll's margin of error. Depending on what the weather's like tomorrow, the success of Get Out the Vote efforts, I wouldn't be surprised to see Ohio tip one way or the other. It's really that close.
Okay. Barry Horstman, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Barry Horstman joined us from his office at the Cincinnati Post, and we're going to be continuing checking in on battleground states and on legal developments and around the country and that sort of thing. And when we come back from a break, we'll also be talking about the House and Senate races around the country with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor. Stay with us. 800-989-8255. What are you doing today? It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The first polls open in less than 17 hours. So how are you spending your time today? Mobilizing voters, attending campaign rallies, or tuning out until The Daily Show starts later tonight? Give us a phone call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org, a non-advocacy website that provides news and analysis on election reform. And joining us here in Studio 3A is NPR's political editor, Ken Rudin. Good to have you as always, Ken.
Thank you, Neil.
And I note that the new edition of Political Junkie, your column, which is available for anybody to read on NPR.org, is up, and you not only predict the presidential election, you talk about the shape of the next Senate and the next House of Representatives.
I get paid big bucks to do so. That's correct.
That's correct. So let's talk for a moment about the United States Senate. At the moment, the Republicans hold a razor-thin majority, 51-48-1, an independent who tends to organize with the Democrats.
Right, and most of the seats that are up this year are held by the Democrats. 19 of the 34 seats are held by Democrats. That are up 15 by the Republicans. The Republicans look like they may, if they're going to do well tomorrow, it looks like it's going to happen in the South, where five incumbents are retiring. That's in North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Louisiana, and Georgia.
Those are all Democratic
incumbents. Those are all Democratic incumbents who are retiring. We're not going to know, we probably won't know who's going to win in Louisiana tomorrow, because it's a very strange election. Everybody runs on one ballot. If one candidate gets 50%, then he or she is elected, but most likely it will go to a December runoff. So we may not even know control of the Senate until December.
And there are some seats Republicans have to defend, retirements in Illinois, for example, and, a freshman senator who may be in trouble in Alaska.
That's right. I mean, you know, at Yankee Stadium, everybody told Pedro Martinez, who's your daddy? In Alaska, they know who Lisa Murkowski's daddy is. He's the guy who appointed her to the Senate. So, and that nepotism is really a big issue in there. She's in big trouble there.
Barack Obama expected to coast to victory, the Democrat, in Illinois.
And I predict that Illinois will elect an African-American senator tomorrow. Obviously, both candidates are black, but no, Obama will be a Democratic pickup and only the third black candidate elected to the Senate since Reconstruction.
And some other close races in Colorado, Oklahoma, even Kentucky.
Right. Well, Kentucky was not supposed to be a close election. It was supposed to be a slam dunk for Jim Bunning, the former baseball pitcher, all-star Hall of Fame pitcher. But he has made a series of very bizarre, shall we say, comments, statements over the last couple of weeks, not knowing some things. He says he doesn't read the papers. He gets all his news from Fox News. He seems to be a little out of touch. He's very sensitive about that. He says there's absolutely nothing wrong. But there's been a whispering campaign about his health. I still think Bunning holds on, but it's going to be very, very close. A Democrat by the name of Daniel Margiotto, who's a medical doctor, Democrats are very high on. They're pouring a lot of money into that campaign at the end. I think Bunning holds on. Bush will win the state handily tomorrow.
And so your prediction, as I see on the Political Junkie column, is the Republicans pick up a net gain of one.
I think Republicans will lose a seat in Alaska. I think they're in trouble in Colorado, where Ben Nighthorse Campbell is retiring. Ken Salazar is the state attorney general there. He's run a strong campaign appealing to many rural conservative voters. Pete Kors is the Republican, you know, the Kors family,
brewery
family. A lot of people say that Kors is not as strong on the issues. Some people call him Kors Light. But Salazar is running a very strong campaign. He may even help John Kerry. I don't think John Kerry wins Colorado, but Salazar may be the leading vote getter in the state.
And then we talk about the House of Representatives, and all of the experts that you read, the analysts say, look, it could be a spread of plus or minus three. And either way, the control of the House of Representatives is not going to change.
I think there's no question about that. Democrats need a net gain of 13 seats to win, and most people actually see that Republicans may even pick up a seat or two, probably because of the new favorable lines for them in Texas.
The redistricting that went ahead in Texas. And before we let you go, I guess we have to ask your pick in the presidential race, Ken.
Well, I say it's going to be tomorrow. That's what I say it's tomorrow.
Absolutely. Who do you think is going to win that election?
You know something? A lot of people say that predicting a winner shows some kind of a bias, and of course it's not that, but when you look at every state, you look at the polls, you look at the turnout, you look at the perhaps all these new registered voters, And I know over the weekend I've read things that there seems to be some kind of momentum towards the president. My gut tells me that John Kerry pulls it out. I should tell you, 4 years ago I picked Al Gore to win, and although I gave Florida to Al Gore, and I guess I was either right or wrong, but George Bush did win. I think that while Bush wins Florida, I think Ohio does go for Kerry. I think Minnesota and Iowa, very tight races, states, go to Kerry. If Bush wins either Minnesota or Iowa, he is reelected. If New Mexico, which I have going to Kerry, if New Mexico goes to Bush, I think it's a 269 tie, and then you'll have fights over electors who may switch or not switch. Oh. I mean, the scenarios are amazing.
You're calling for the possibility of a tie. People might think you're in the news business, Ken.
Tie goes to the runner.
Let's get a caller on the line. Jeff is with us from San Diego.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
First, let me preface this by saying that in the 2000 election, I was living in Broward County, Florida, and indeed I voted for Ralph Nader. So I've been following this election, of course, extremely closely. My question is this. We never hear about the statistical accuracy of these polls post-election. In other words, I want to know, what are the what organizations, news organizations, political organizations, what is their accuracy rate after the election? We never seem to hear about it, and it just seems to disappear. So,
track records? Gentlemen, either Doug or Ken, do we have any idea what the track records of the polls are?
Well, we do actually do cover it. Remember the famous stories in 2000 when most polls showed George W. Bush winning the popular vote. Matter of fact, the scenario that most people thought about in 2000 was that Bush wins the popular vote but lose the Electoral College. So, and Al Gore won the popular vote by 500,000. It's true that most people do forget about the wrong calls, but basically, and Doug can agree that most of these polls seem to be pretty much in line with each other, at least at this stage. Age of the game.
Doug, Dewey beats Truman, but other than that?
I think Ken's exactly right. I think that the general trend seems to be that they're all hovering around, they're bouncing around some baseline that they all seem to agree on. What's interesting to me is the extent to which we're starting to see people comparing polls, how they're sampled, how they're conducted, how the questions are asked in a way that we might not have done had the election not been so close.
But is there a clear winner if you look at the Marist or the Quinnipiac or the Gallup? Anybody's doing better than anybody else?
To my knowledge, no. I mean, I'm not an opinion researcher, but as someone who follows these for a living every day, they seem to be trending towards a very close election with the sample or the time that the poll is taken determining which candidate ends up ahead.
So, Jeff, I think what we should do then is write down what everybody's spread is today and compare it with what happens, whenever we know.
No doubt. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate it. Gentlemen, I'd like to ask you both about something, and that is about the mechanics of turning out the vote. How are the campaigns actually going out and trying to get people to the polls? I mean, is this literally driving people to their precincts on Election Day, Doug?
Well, the first thing that they're doing to turn people out to the polls is they're using early voting. I mean, we are noticing that the campaigns are, in an unprecedented way, pushing people into early voting, both to get those votes in the can, as it were, as well as to eliminate any question as to what precinct they're in by getting them to a central location. Beyond that, we're seeing everything from volunteers with Palm Pilots and handheld computers that they can show voters videos. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the very simple, who do I think will vote for my candidate and what can I do to get them to the polls on Election Day?
Ken, this is a combination of very sophisticated technology, all these computer databases we're hearing about that can go down to the household to identify likely voters or registered voters, and this old-fashioned thing of going and knocking on the door.
Well, that's true, but remember what happened in 2000. A lot of the Bush supporters thought that the Christian conservative vote was in the bag, and apparently it wasn't as a lock as many Republicans thought, and Bush did more poorly among Christian conservatives 4 years ago than they expected. Al Gore looked at the polls in Ohio 4 years ago and pulled out early. As it turned out, that it was much, much closer than expected. Obviously, the techniques and the technology is far more advanced, even 4 years later.
Let's get another caller on the line. Mark is with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What are you doing today, Mark?
Well, I'm out with a program called Take Back Ohio. It's basically a labor program with our AFL-CIO and all the various affiliates here in the state. And we are out all weekend, have been out for months, but certainly now, today and this afternoon, knocking on doors, talking to labor union members and their households, encouraging them to vote tomorrow, and, of course, certainly encouraging them to vote for Kerry.
Again, you're going to union households?
Yeah, that's right. We have data. You were just talking about the lists that have been generated. And what we've been doing for months in Ohio, because this is absolutely such a key battleground state, I live right in Columbus, Ohio. So out with a list, I go up and I knock on a door. I ask if the voter, if the union member is home, or if they're not home, if I could leave the information with them. And, of course, remind them how absolutely critical this election is to take back Ohio and certainly to deliver Ohio for John Kerry.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, thanks. How is it going, by the way?
It's going great. I mean, Neil, it's you're basically mining for votes. Of course, a lot of people are at work this afternoon, as you would expect. But every once in a while, you get that truly undecided voter that wants to talk. You give them the information and, of course, encourage them. And it's going great. Definitely Kerry's going to win Ohio tomorrow.
Okay. You're the one who's certain about that, Mark. Thank you very much.
Absolutely certain. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Ken, obviously, labor unions are out there, the majority of them on the Democratic side. But there are other private groups. It's not just the political parties this time around.
Oh, absolutely not. And the election laws, the campaign finance laws allows that. There are all these independent groups, and there's always been independent groups like the Christian Coalition, things like that, these 527 groups that really don't have to officially coordinate with a candidate, but of course they're out there with millions and millions of dollars, unprecedented amount of money being raised on the internet. You know, I was listening to the guy from Ohio and saying, well, it sounds so, you know, old-fashioned to be knocking on doors, but remember, Al Gore won New Mexico 4 years ago by 366 votes. There's no such thing as taking vote for granted, as we learned. I mean, every vote counts. It sounds like a cliche, but 4 years ago proved it's true.
One of the truisms we always hear about in terms of analyzing the vote is by ethnic blocks. Well, joining us now is Pedro Sevcek, election anchor for Noticiero Telemundo, and he's with us from Telemundo's election headquarters in New York City. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And as you're looking at the Hispanic vote tomorrow, is this a block vote?
No. Well, actually, it traditionally goes for the Democrats, but it's a lot more complex in terms of how it's going to play in different states. Nationally, I would say that it's highly probable that two-thirds of the Hispanic vote will go for Senator Kerry. And if President Bush goes to 35%, they will be having a party. If they go any higher than that, it will be a lot of trouble for Senator Kerry. But as state-wide, it's different. And you have places like Florida and New Mexico, for example, that could be key in this election again. They have some big changes. Florida, for example, have registered a lot, I will say, in the close to 250,000 new Hispanic voters, and we're talking about a big difference. For example, when you compare the Cuban vote that keeps being very Republican, even with a new generation of Cubans that is more oriented to the Democrats' side, you have the Puerto Rican vote and the center of in central Florida, which is a more Democrat, and then you have a wild card. You have lots of South American votes, and traditionally Latin America, it's more oriented to the Democrats than the Republicans. But you have people coming from Colombia and Venezuela that, in this situation, because of what's going on in their countries, could be voting for Bush.
It's Election Day minus one. We're talking about the ground war, getting out the vote around the country. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Ken Rudin here. One wild card in Florida, though, you have the Republican Senate candidate there is Mel Martinez, who is Hispanic, born in Cuba, who would be the first Cuban-American ever elected to the Senate should he win. He's in a razor-tight battle there. But he may also be picking up a lot of Latino voters who are not necessarily Cuban voters, you know, from Cuban-Americans. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's some Republicans feel that Martinez's presence on the ballot could help the president carry the state of Florida.
And similarly, Pedro, you have a Democratic Hispanic Senate candidate in Colorado, mm-hmm, who might help the challenger, John Kerry.
According to what we are seeing in Colorado, it's looking like at the presidential level, it will go for President Bush, but there's a high chance for Salazar to win that Senate. You know, it will be the presidential one side, Senate race, and the other side with Salazar maybe being the first Hispanic in more than 40 years in Senate.
Pedro Sefcik, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
A pleasure, sir.
And good luck tomorrow night. Maybe you all have a winner by the end of the evening.
Let's hope so.
Pedro Sefcik is the anchor for Noticiero Telemundo, and he joined us from the network's election headquarters in New York City. Let's get another caller on the line. And Ann is with us calling from, the election epicenter, Broward County in Florida.
Yes, I'm calling with very sweaty palms.
Ah.
I just don't see how this is going to be decided tomorrow. I really don't. And I think there's some real concern down here about some violence. Tension's running awfully high. I guess you all, I'm sure you've heard about this, very long lines for early voting. I tried to get in today. It's impossible. People are stealing other people's signs off their lawns. And it's definitely tense.
Mm-hmm. Doug Chapin, we've seen these sign-stealing stories everywhere, Pennsylvania, all over the country. And today there are reports of, I guess this comes around every election day, mischievous phone calls as people pretending to be from one side or the other.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was a report out of Allegheny County in Pennsylvania where supposedly a notice went around that said that because of the potential for long lines at the polls, I believe it was Republicans should vote Tuesday the 2nd and Democrats Wednesday the 3rd. My understanding is that a very similar message went out in Florida 4 years ago with the parties reversed. So apparently the parties are very eager to learn lessons from history. But you do get these stories in the run-up to Election Day.
Well, I'm personally looking forward to having soap commercials back on the air. Although I must say I've been flattered. I've gotten a lot of interesting phone calls recently. Bette Midler called me yesterday.
How is the divine Miss M?
She sends her best. Hillary's called, Bill's called, I seem to be on everybody's list. But I think we're all looking forward to a sigh of relief, although I don't know when that sigh is going to come. I really don't. I can't imagine this thing being resolved quickly.
And you could live in California or New York and nobody would call you. So maybe.
I'm honored, I know. And I'm sure I'm the very special one that they're calling.
But you'd know about that super extra added ingredient in every brand of detergent.
That's right.
Thanks for the phone call, Ann.
Of course. Thank you.
Do we know any information on which way early voters, and there are unprecedented numbers of early voters, which way they're leaning?
The conventional wisdom seems to be that many of them are Democrats. But, of course, there's no way of knowing that.
That's just wisdom.
It's conventional. I don't know about how wise it is. Mm-hmm. But there's really no way of knowing.
Because once upon a time, absentee ballots were thought to be Republican, and yet we saw in 2000 that was not the case any longer.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email we got from Rose Dufour. I work at the Scripps Institute of Oceanography. Our research vessel, Roger Revelle, is scheduled to sail a mile and a half on a cruise out of San Diego. The ship's departure has been delayed in order to give the crew and the scientists the opportunity and the great desire to vote before sailing. So the oceanographer vote, well, we know that's coming in. Ken Rudin, thanks very much for being with us. And again, you can read his predictions on Political Junkie, which is available at npr.org. He makes a buck or two on the side as NPR's political editor. Thanks very much for being with us, Ken.
A buck.
Okay, buck and a quarter.
Thanks, Neil.
We're going to continue with more of your calls and with Doug Chapin when we come back from a short break as we continue talking about what everybody is doing around the country today as we get prepared for a major election tomorrow. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The first polls open in less than 17 hours. Of course, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people have already voted early. So how are you spending your time today? Mobilizing voters, attending campaign rallies, or tuning out? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And our guest here in Studio 3A is Doug Chapin, director of electionline.org. And, Doug, as we continue to talk about this election, one of the things that we're going to be looking at tomorrow night is what we're going to hearing from exit surveys. These are polls conducted by news organizations or, I guess, a collection of news organizations or a consortium of news organizations or an organization hired by news organizations. And an interesting ruling today, you were pointing out just a minute ago, in Ohio.
Yeah, we've had a lawsuit filed in the state of Ohio by a group of media organizations challenging Ohio's rule that keeps their exit pollsters from polling within 100 feet of a polling place. That, they say, is different from what they were told during the primary this year, and they are fighting to get their pollsters back inside that 100-foot bubble. So it'll be something worth watching on Election Day.
Okay, let's take a call, and Carrie is with us from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon to you all, and I just like to say I work for a 527 group, and I voted early, and the city of St. Louis seems to be conducting the election very efficiently. That was my impression, and I will be driving people to the polls tomorrow.
Now, last time around, there were some problems in St. Louis.
Yes, there were, and we seem to have handled that. This group that I work for, which I'd rather not say, has made efforts to validate every single ballot that they've registered.
Now, how do you know? You say you're driving people. How do you know who to pick up?
There we have lists. All the voters that we registered are in our data file, and we know where they live, and they gave us that information freely and willingly. And if they checked a box saying, we need to ride to the polls, we'll make sure they get there.
And do you give them a call on the way from a cell phone
Absolutely.
Or something? Yeah. And are there enough poll workers, I mean, people at the polls to actually handle what some people are anticipating could be a record turnout?
I seem to understand that there's an enormous influx of people willing to make sure everything goes smoothly, that anybody who has problems with their registration, if they're at the wrong polling place, whatever, is there. Everyone is aware of contingencies.
Okay. Carrie, thanks very much for the phone call, and good luck tomorrow.
All right, thank you. Good luck to you all.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
What we heard from Carrie raises a big question, or what could be a big question this year, and that is provisional ballots.
Provisional ballots are a huge deal in the 2004 election. The Help America Vote Act, which is the new federal law that was passed in 2002, requires that all states provide voters provisional ballots if for some reason their names are not on the rolls on Election Day. That's not a new procedure in many states, but the federal requirement is. And over the last several really weeks, maybe the last month, we've seen a growing split between the states as to how they will consider those ballots. The majority of states, 27 states and the District of Columbia, will require that a voter be in the proper precinct in order for that provisional ballot to count. And after a rash of lawsuits that left us somewhat uncertain, that status quo seems to have played out, that in those 27 states and the district where you need to be in the right precinct to cast a ballot, those laws will still apply.
And in other states, though, it'll count if you're in the right congressional district.
Or the right county. It varies. Some states will count only the presidential ballot. Some states will count statewide. Some states will count it for any race for which you would have had the right to vote had you been in the proper precinct.
Where do Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania count on this provisional ballot issue?
Florida and Ohio are both on the more restrictive end of the spectrum. I want to say that Pennsylvania is one of the more liberal states, but certainly we've had litigation in Florida and Ohio, which was decided in favor of the precinct-only rule. And Pennsylvania, as I page through my my organization's report, is a state that actually allows you to cast it outside your precinct as long as you're in the correct jurisdiction, which I believe in Pennsylvania is the county.
Okay. Now, there are an awful lot of ways to predict an election. Opinion polls are one. They're not proving too decisive this time around. There are many other predictors, of course, as Ken Rudin notes in his Political Junkie column today. The Democratic presidential candidate has won every election year when the Boston Red Sox win the World Series. Of course, that was in 1916 and 1912, the last two times that happened in an election year. Bush supporters should not be dismayed. Elementary school children who voted in the weekly reader poll, which has chosen the winning candidate since 1956, picked George Bush. Mere coincidence or prescient indicators? Here to help us understand is Carl Sigmund, professor at the Center for Applied Probability at Columbia University. He's with us by phone from New York City. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, those predictors we mentioned are hardly the only oddball election forecasters. Cookie bake-offs. I think First Lady Laura Bush's oatmeal chocolate chunk cookie recipe beat Teresa Hines Carey's pumpkin spice recipe by 67%. On the other hand, in the past 25 years, voters have only once chosen in 2000 the shorter candidate in a presidential election. And that, of course, should be, if historical trends continue, good news for John Kerry. So, Carl Sigmund, are these just coincidence, or depending on how you look at it, are any accurate?
Well, most of these are kind of fall in the same framework as I would call kind of a matching problem. The one that seems to be the most interesting lately is the one about the Washington Redskins.
And if you saw the game yesterday, you heard about this ad infinitum.
Yes. So maybe if I use that one as an example, it'll help explain all the others. The way, say, we in the science community might view this, the idea is that we're looking to see whether or not when they win, the incumbent party wins. When they lose, the incumbent party loses, for example. And it turns out that this happened 18 times in a row for the Washington Redskins.
So if the Redskins won the game before the presidential election in a year where an incumbent was being challenged, the incumbent won. If the Redskins lost, then the incumbent lost.
That's correct. That's what has happened in the last 18 rounds.
And we should note for those who are not interested in professional football that yesterday the Green Bay Packers defeated the Washington Redskins.
That's right. So the first thing to do is to say, well, what would be the probability of this type of thing happening? And the way we might want to analyze is to say, well, imagine that we have two players, Bob and Mary, and they each have a fair coin. And they each flip their coin every 4 years. Then it's as if we're asking, what's the probability that the outcomes of their flips match 18 times in a row? Heads, heads, or tails, tails.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, we would compute the probability, because each time they do it, it's about a half. And then we get one half times one half and so forth, 18 times. It turns out to be about 38 out of 10 million, the chance. Very small. But the thing to realize is that things with small probability do happen because we have so much time and such to have them happen. For example, I could keep flipping a coin. Eventually, I would see it land 18 times in a row or 100 times in a row.
And the number of things that can coincide is enormous.
Yes, and that's the second thing that's important here, is that it turns out, from what I can gather, that someone looked for this match. It's not like in 1932 they said, we're going to use this as a predictor of the presidency. It's that in the year 2000 someone noticed that the Washington Redskins had an outcome like that 18 times in a row. Now, what if we simply start looking around for other matches? We might look at all games, all possible player, all types of things, and we would find lots of matches like that.
Mm.
For example, maybe we could say, let's find a city in the world whereby the day before the election, if it rained, the incumbent party lost. If it shined, the incumbent party won. I bet you we could find a city like that. And then we would say, wow, this is an amazing predictor here.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of things out there that we could find that would match.
There are also predictors like the Iowa Electronic Markets Futures, which have also proven accurate. That might be a better match.
Yeah, that's a more serious analysis. That's quite interesting. There they sell basically two types of options. You can buy Bush shares or Kerry shares. Maybe we should just focus on the one called winner takes all. So the idea now is that you buy a share of, say, Kerry, and maybe the price right now is roughly equal because it's such a close election. Let's just, for instance, say it's 50 cents each. You pay 50 cents for a share of Kerry. If Kerry wins, you win a dollar. If Kerry loses, you get nothing. The same with Bush. If you buy 25 shares, then you would get $25 or nothing. That's a winner takes all.
Mm-hmm.
And the key here is that the price of these shares are being dictated about what people think will win, not who they would vote for if they could vote themselves. It's who they think will win. So in some sense, they have the information of the polls at their disposal and their own feelings about what might happen. And it turns out it is a very good predictor of what will happen.
And who's ahead in that predictor at this point?
Right now, I don't know. I haven't looked at it today. I don't know. It's been fairly, getting closer and closer as we approach Election Day.
And I believe Bush was in the lead until at least very recently.
I think so.
If Mr. Kerry has overtaken him, it's late news.
Yes. However, it's interesting to note that what they do on their markets is they base everything on the popular vote. So, for example, in the year 2000, when they thought that Bush was going to win, technically Gore won because Gore did win the popular vote.
Hmm. So you can be right and be wrong and be right anyway.
That's correct.
Okay. Carl Sigmund, thank you very much for being with us.
You're most welcome.
Carl Sigmund is a professor at the Center for Applied Probability at Columbia University. He joined us by phone from New York City. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Daniel is with us, calling from Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
Hello?
Daniel, you're on the air.
Yes. I was just calling because the military vote, because I'm in the United States Marine Corps, the military vote usually swings Republican, but I haven't heard any news on... Which on any type of polls that have been done in the military about which way the
soldiers
are going to go.
Yeah, Doug Chapin, have you seen any polls of armed men and women in the armed service?
I've not, although I do know that the interest in those voters is intense. The fight about how to get those military voters' ballots back from abroad, especially from areas in the Middle East where postal service is, shall we say, unreliable, has been a key concern and actually factored into a lawsuit in at least one state, Pennsylvania.
Okay, and I'm getting word from our editor that, in fact, it is illegal to do opinion polls of U.S. Servicemen and women dating back to the Second World War. So that may be a reason you've not seen that poll, Daniel.
Oh, okay.
And I know that, however, the situation, at least in Pennsylvania and I think in Colorado, in terms of holding the date open for absentee ballots is because soldiers were late getting their ballots in Iraq. So that's another way that the soldiers have been weighing in, I guess, so far in the election.
Well, having served in Iraq, I know about how bad the Postal Service is over there.
I can't imagine why. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Daniel.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's talk now with Cindy, and Cindy is calling from Ketchum, Idaho.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You asked what we were doing today, and what I'm trying to do is stay positive, stay home, be creative, and looking forward to voting tomorrow and having it all over.
Is Idaho's not one of those states that's being bombarded with election commercials, is it?
Well, I think we're bombarded just like anyone else, but not as heavily because they think that it's a pretty secure vote, how we vote, although many of us vote differently. And so I don't think we're getting hit as hard as some of the other states.
And when you say you're trying to stay positive, is that a reflection of what some people regard as the negativity of this campaign thus far?
Very much so. And I'm very sick of the negativity. I try and be a positive person anyway, and it's been very difficult to be inundated with it. I don't think that the politicians really give their own opinions. I think that they just have been tearing each other apart. And so we really aren't hearing their side of the story.
Okay, and you're just trying to hang in until you can actually get to the polls there in Ketchum?
Yes, it'll be easy. We have a small town, and so I enjoy going to the polls.
Okay, and you probably know the people at work at the polling station.
I do, and I look forward to voting tomorrow. And I have a lot of friends who voted early, but I like to go on Election Day.
Okay, Cindy, thanks very much, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We did get this email from Chris Werner, a Democrat, who wrote to us on email from Utah. I vote here, he wrote, not because I believe my vote will make a difference. Utah is pretty reliably Republican state, but because it gives me the right to complain legitimately afterwards. That from Ruth Werner in Utah. And that's one thing that we forget about, Doug Chapin, as we go through these battleground states. There's an awful lot of people in a lot of states around the country who, they may turn out in large numbers tomorrow, but in effect, their votes have been, in some respect, counted already.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think one of the things you hear about every 4 years, especially when the race is this close, is complaints about the Electoral College. There are many states that do not see much or any presidential activity. I live across the river in Northern Virginia, and Virginia, I believe, is considered fairly reliably Republican, and so we rarely see any activity in an election year. My wife's family, however, is from Minnesota, and we visited Minnesota for summer vacation this year, and even for 2 weeks in August, I was struck by how intensely the presidential campaign was already being fought. So to that small number of us who are political junkies, we go through withdrawal when we don't live in a state where the campaign is being very tightly contested.
Well, I'll be back tomorrow or day after with the results of what happens tomorrow. Doug Chapin, thanks very much. Doug Chapin is director of electionline.org. He joined us here in Studio 3A. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.